Chapter 14, Louisiana from 1940 to 1972, Politics, War, and Civil Rights. Andrew Jackson Higgins was born in Nebraska in 1886, but moved to the South in his early 20s to work in the lumber industry. By the time he was 24, Higgins had become the manager of a lumber business with headquarters in New Orleans. 6 years later, in 1922, he established his own firm, calling it Higgins Lumber and Export Company. Because his business required boats of various sizes to remove and transport lumber, Higgins set up a shipyard to maintain the boats his company purchased. Over time, he also became interested in boat design. Higgins began to design boats that would work in Louisiana's waterway environment. One of the earliest designs was called the Eureka boat. Its main innovation, new idea, method, or device was to enclose the propeller within a hollow space in the boat's hull. This made it easier for the boat to cross the shallow waters and marshes of coastal Louisiana. Higgins also designed boats with superior speed, easy handling, and a special bow, the front of a boat, that made it simple to drive them onto beaches and riverbanks and then return them to the water. When his lumber company went out of business, Higgins turned all of his energies to his boat building, founding Higgins Industries in 1930. Higgins's boats were extremely popular in Louisiana, but he had a harder time convincing the U.S. Navy of their value. In the middle of the Great Depression, the nation devoted few resources to its military, and the Navy often preferred boats of its own design. However, as European nations began to expand and modernize their militaries in preparation for a possible war, the United States slowly moved in that direction as well. After Higgins's designs outperformed several of the Navy's designs in side-by-side tests in 1938, Higgins became a key supplier to the U.S. military. By 1944, more than half of the nation's naval fleet was made up of boats designed and built by Higgins Industries. This success pumped millions of dollars into Louisiana's economy, especially in New Orleans, where Higgins Industries had 20,000 employees working at 7 different sites in the early 1940s. In consultation with the military, Higgins added a drop-down rear gate to one of his landing craft designs so that troops could get off quickly during military operations. The resulting boat, known as Landing Craft Vehicle Personnel, LCVP, came simply to be called the Higgins boat. Looking back over the role the Higgins boat played in the United States' victory in World War II, Dwight D. Eisenhower, who had been a high-ranking general in that war, said Andrew Higgins was the man who won the war for us. In this chapter, we will examine the political environment in Louisiana in the years between 1940 and 1972. You will also learn about World War II and the effects it had on the people and economy of Louisiana. Finally, we will see how, in the aftermath of that war, the quest or search for racial equality and civil rights gained momentum and brought profound change to the state. Section 1. Politics, Longs, and Anti-Longs. As you read, look for the contrasting programs of pro-long and anti-long governors in the 1940s, 1950s, and 1960s. How the civil service system was brought to Louisiana by Governor Jones, undone by Governor Long, and reinstated by Governor Kennan. The actions of Jimmy Davis and Earl Long that put Louisiana in the national spotlight. Terms: civil service system, sales tax, consecutive. After the scandals of 1939, the two main candidates for the governor's office in 1940 were Earl Long and Sam Houston Jones. Earl Long had the advantages that came with being Huey's brother and the interim governor. However, the crimes uncovered during the Louisiana scandals made the Long political machine less popular with voters. Although Earl had not been among those charged in 1939, many people found it hard to believe that he had not known about the criminal activities of his fellow elected officials. The governorship of Sam Jones. The election of Sam Jones to the state's highest office reflected that view. In fact, when Jones became governor in 1940, voters also sent a majority of anti-Long legislators into both the state Senate and House. Jones had promised voters that he would continue many of the popular programs of the Longs. These included supplying free school books and continuing the popular road and infrastructure projects of the Huey Long era. However, Jones also promised to provide those services without graft and corruption. The new governor also promised to reform the way state workers were hired, and he warned his supporters that there would be fewer state jobs available. Jones got rid of the deduct system and also promoted legislation that set up a civil service system. The civil service system was designed to ensure that state jobs went to people on the basis of their experience or qualifications for the job, rather than on the basis of political patronage. Jones also worked to undo legislation that had given most of the power in the state to the governor. In the process, however, Jones made it easier for pro-Long legislators, who regained seats in 1942, to oppose his plans. Although Jones had only partial success as a reformer, he did bring dignity and stability back to the governor's office. This was a welcome change after Huey's power grabbing and the often outrageous behavior and the financial scandals of the Lesh administration. Jimmy Davis, the singing governor. Earl Long ran for governor in 1944 but was defeated again, this time by a public service commissioner from Shreveport named Jimmy Davis. Although Davis had served in a number of political positions, he was best known as an entertainer. Davis wrote and performed country and western songs and was nationally known as the singing cowboy. Louisiana voters knew his name, liked his music, saw his record of public service, and assumed he would be a good governor. To his credit, Davis caused no scandals during his term. His critics complained that was because he spent so much time working as an entertainer out of the state. Davis did, in fact, spend a great deal of time outside of Louisiana, recording and touring. He released 5 songs, and one of them, "There's a New Moon Over My Shoulder," became a number one hit. He also filmed a movie titled Louisiana, which premiered, had its first showing, in Shreveport in 1947. In the film, Davis played a singer who became a politician. Earl Long becomes governor. Not surprisingly, Earl Long was one of Davis's strongest critics. When he ran again in 1948, Uncle Earl, as Long often called himself, went on the road with a band of his own. Though he did not sing, he was certainly entertaining. During his circus-like campaign appearances, Earl and his associates rolled into Louisiana cities and towns with musicians and prizes to give away. After the band played, Earl took the stage. Before speaking, he gave away hams, turkeys, and other things he picked up from roadside farm stands. Earl sometimes claimed the peas and other produce came directly from the garden at his beloved farm outside Winfield. Earl's Pea Patch Farm had become his unofficial headquarters in the years he was out of office. After 8 years of anti-Long governors, the voters were apparently ready to give Earl and Longism another try. Earl served his first elected term as governor between 1948 and 1952. During that time, he tried to roll back many of the reforms started by Jones. In particular, Long repealed civil service reforms and brought back patronage hiring of state employees. He also added 4,000 state jobs, giving himself even more favors to dispense, hand out. While Long continued and in some cases expanded the social programs voters had come to expect, he was forced to raise taxes to pay for them. During this term, the state sales tax, a tax paid on the purchase of goods and services and collected by the seller, doubled. New taxes were passed on items that ranged from tobacco to oil and gas. Earl defended the taxes as necessary, but his attempt to reestablish the kind of absolute control over state government that Huey Long had exercised fell short. Unable to succeed himself, Earl returned to the Pea Patch Farm and waited to run again. Robert Kennan's term as governor. In 1952, the voters elected Robert Kennan, a lawyer from Minden and Webster Parish, as governor. Kennan was a serious, dignified man who had an approach that he called government by the civics books. In contrast to the careless spending of the Long eras, Kennan sought to reshape state government in ways that reflected the best practices of other states. Kennan pushed for more careful accounting of state spending and established independent boards to oversee spending in several key areas. He also worked to rebuild the state system of civil service that Earl Long had damaged. In some ways, Kennan was very modern in his approach to governing. At the same time, he sought to defend a more traditional view on race relations. When the U.S. Supreme Court ordered states to set up systems of racially integrated schools in 1954, Kennan disagreed with the order and pledged to defend segregation. Earl Long's chaotic second term. Not yet finished with politics, Earl Long sought another term and became governor again in 1956. Although Earl wanted political power and control, his personal behavior overshadowed the accomplishments of his second term. One method Earl used to increase his power and enhance the number of voters who would support him was to put African Americans back on the voting rolls. At the time Earl entered office in 1948, African Americans constituted only 2.4% of registered voters. By the end of his first term, that number had increased to 12.6%. By the end of his second term, African Americans made up 15.6% of the state's registered voters. Earl expected these newly registered voters to support him and Long endorsed candidates and policies. Not everyone, however, was pleased with this development. Some state legislators who were committed to segregation sought ways to remove these voters from the rolls. Long fought back, and many legislative sessions were dominated by disagreements over this issue, especially in 1959. In late May, Earl spoke to legislators to defend African American voting rights. Whatever his intent, his speech quickly turned into a rambling tirade or outburst filled with profanity, which gained national attention. Despite attempts by family and friends to keep him out of the spotlight, he returned to the legislature the following day and engaged in another outrageous tirade against his political opponents. Concerned about his mental health, his family had Earl committed to a sanitarium hospital in Galveston, Texas. While there, doctors determined that his strange behavior was caused by several small strokes. Earl begged his wife to let him return to Louisiana. She gave in, and shortly Earl was confined to the state mental hospital at Mandeville. While there, he gave rambling radio speeches that were broadcast around the state. He also fired the officials in charge of the state's hospitals and replaced them with men who were willing to certify him sane and order his release. The issues that lay in the background of these events were serious ones that would continue to dominate politics in the years to come. But Earl's strange behavior became the thing people remembered about his final term. Despite all the chaos, Earl tried to find a way to have a consecutive, following without interruption, term as governor, even though state law prohibited it. When he failed to find a way around the law, he set out on a campaign for a seat in the U.S. Congress. Earl worked hard as always. After suffering a heart attack on the day of the election, he refused to go to the hospital, fearing that voters might not select him if they knew. Earl won the Democratic primary and agreed to be hospitalized the next day. He died not long after, on September 5, 1960. Politics after the Long Era. In the 25 years since Huey's death, Long's Longism and opponents to it had remained at the center of the state's political system. By the time Earl died, a new set of issues, particularly those focused on racial equality and civil rights, had come to dominate the political scene. Jimmy Davis won his second term as governor in 1960, based in part on his pledge to protect segregation and defend what he and others referred to as the Southern way of life. By the time Davis's second term ended in 1964, the federal government had settled these issues in ways that made integration of schools and other public places a matter of federal, not state, law. John J. McKithen's two terms. In early 1964, a new governor had just been elected, and the fate of the civil rights movement was still an open question. The new governor, John J. McKithen, was from the small town of Grayson, near Columbia in Caldwell Parish. In many ways, McKithen represented the past. He had been a legislative floor leader under Earl Long. By the 1960s, he still believed in Longism and the kind of widespread social benefits it supported. On the other hand, McKithen had promised to defend segregation in the state. Whether he took this position out of a strong personal belief or as a way to gain votes, his promise became irrelevant when President Lyndon B. Johnson signed important civil rights and voting rights acts in 1964 and 1965. Despite the passage of these laws, there was still racial unrest in the state. Governor McKithen worked hard to bring the racial tensions to an end. he appointed a commission with both black and white members to help the state move peacefully from segregation to racial integration. In 1967, the governor even assigned state troopers to protect civil rights marchers who organized a march from Bogalusa to Baton Rouge. Although he had come into office a segregationist, federal legislation and fate turned McKithen into the governor who led the state into the post-Jim Crow era. McKithen had other accomplishments as well. He worked hard to bring new businesses and well-paying jobs to the state. He also reformed government spending and borrowing practices. This made purchasing more uniform and saved the state large amounts of money in the process. McKithen was so popular in his first term that the voters even approved legislation that allowed Louisiana governors to serve a second consecutive term. That new law and McKithen's popularity led him to become the first governor in the 20th century to serve two consecutive terms. He won his second term with 82% of the popular vote. When John McKithen left office at the beginning of 1972, the state had undergone a period of enormous change in a very short period of time. That change did not come without conflict, but McKithen's leadership spared the people of Louisiana some of the violence that accompanied those same changes in Mississippi and Alabama.